All right, I want you to try something for me, just for a second. Put your coffee down, stop typing, whatever it is you're doing, and just look at your hand, flex your fingers a bit, make a fist. It seems so simple, right? But what you're looking at is, well, it's an absolute marvel of evolutionary engineering. You've got 27 bones, over 30 muscles, and this network of nerves so dense you can feel a single hair on a tabletop with your eyes closed.
It really is the ultimate interface. I mean, we've spent billions on robotics trying to replicate the human hand, the grip strength, the fine motor control, that sensory feedback loop, and we still haven't built anything that even comes close to the original.
Exactly. It's the tool that built every single other tool. And this is the paradox that just kept jumping out at me while I was reading through our sources for today. These are the tools we rely on for, I mean, literally every aspect of our lives. And yet they are the ones we seem most willing to just put in harm's way.
It's a very strange disconnect, isn't it? We insure our cars. We put these heavy-duty cases on our smartphones because we're terrified of a cracked screen. But when it comes to our hands, especially in industrial settings, there's a level of complacency that is, well, it's just plain risky.
Risky is putting it mildly. Today, we are doing a deep dive into a document that, frankly, every single person who works with their hands needs to hear about. We're looking at shop topics, hand safety, specifically the July 2025 issue.
And this is volume 0003 for those of you tracking the source material at home.
Right, and this isn't just some list of do's and don'ts. This document pulls together some pretty heavy data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases.
And that combination of sources is what makes it so interesting because it gives us a two-front view of the problem. You've got the mechanical trauma, the cuts and the crushes, and then you have the biological side, the hygiene aspect, which is surprisingly critical to safety.
Yeah, so the mission for this deep dive is pretty clear. We really want to unpack why hand injuries are still the number one headline in workplace accidents, even though we have better tech and safety gear than ever before. We're going to break down the best practices, sure, but I want to get beyond the checklist. I want to understand the why. Why do smart people make dangerous decisions with their most valuable tools?
That is the core question. And it usually comes down to, human psychology versus industrial reality.
So let's start with that reality. The shop topics text leads with a statistic from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that it just stopped me in my tracks. Hand injuries account for nearly 23% of all workplace injuries.
23%. That's nearly one in four.
That seems incredibly high. Is that maybe skewed by minor things, like paper cuts or small nicks?
Unfortunately, no. The BLS data, it tends to track reportable injuries, incidents that result in days away from work, job restrictions, or medical treatment that's beyond basic first aid. So when we say 23%, we aren't talking about needing a Band-Aid. We are talking about fractures, amputations, severe burns, nerve damage.
Okay, so we're talking about really life-altering stuff.
Absolutely. The source explicitly lists the consequences. Lost productivity, sure, that's the corporate cost. But for the individual, it's medical costs and potential long-term disability. And I think disability is a word that people just gloss over until it happens to them.
Right, because if you injure your back, it's debilitating, and I don't want to minimize that at all. But if you lose the function of your dominant hand, I mean, that changes how you interact with the world on a fundamental level. Tying your shoes, buttoning a shirt, holding your kid's hand.
It's an identity shift. In a manufacturing or a trade environment, your hands are your livelihood. If they're out of commission, you are effectively sidelined. The text calls them your most valuable tools, and financially speaking, that's a literal fact for a machinist or a carpenter.
So the stakes are massive. But before we get into the, the mechanical ways we destroy our hands, I want to pivot to something the source material spends a surprising amount of time on, the hygiene aspect.
Ah, the 2025 State of Handwashing Report.
Yeah. Now, usually when I see hand washing in a safety brief, I kind of tend to tune out. It feels like elementary school stuff. But the numbers here. They painted a picture of a workforce that is, well, let's just say biologically optimistic.
That is a very polite way to put it.
The report says 48% of US adults admit to either forgetting or just choosing not to wash their hands at key moments. That is almost half the workforce.
It's a staggering number, especially post-2020. You would think the habits we all formed during the pandemic would have stuck around, but this data suggests a regression, a big one.
But here's the number that I just need you to explain this to me. The text says one in five people, 20%, actively choose not to wash their hands. We're not talking about forgetting. We're not talking about being in a rush. They think about it and they decide, no.
The active refusers.
Why? I mean, what is the mindset there? Is it rebellion?
It can be a few things. In some industrial settings, it's a barrier issue. Industrial soaps can be incredibly harsh. If you wash your hands 10 times a day with grit soap, your skin cracks and it bleeds. So some workers avoid it to save their skin, ironically causing a completely different health risk. But for many, it's just a lack of perceived risk. My hands look clean, therefore they are clean.
Which is a really dangerous assumption in a shared workspace.
Exactly. If you work in a shop, you're touching control panels, tool handles, doorknobs. If you're an active refuser, you're effectively turning every single surface you touch into a vector for illness. The source notes that proper hand hygiene prevents about 80% of infectious diseases.
And this is where I think we really need to connect the dots. The text mentions this hygiene stat right alongside safety, and I feel like there's a link between a sick workforce and an injured one.
Oh, there's a direct link. The source mentions reducing absenteeism, which is the obvious part. But think about presenteeism. When workers come in sick, if you have the flu or a bad cold because hygiene is poor in your shop, your cognitive function drops. Your reaction times slow way down.
You're in a fog.
Exactly. And when you're operating a lathe or a press brake in a mental fog, that is precisely when the mechanical injuries happen. So a poor hygiene culture can actually drive up safety incidents.
That makes a lot of sense. It's not just about not getting a cold. It's about staying sharp enough to keep your fingers attached. Speaking of which, let's move to the physical risks. The source breaks down industrial hand injuries into four main categories. I found this really helpful because it moves us away from just accidents happen to specific manageable risks.
Right. If you can name the hazard, you can defend against it.
Okay, so category one is cuts and lacerations. This seems like the most common one.
It is. But the source makes a really important distinction here. It's not just about sharp tools. A lot of these injuries actually come from improper handling of materials.
So not the saw blade itself, but the thing you're cutting.
Exactly that. The jagged edge of a sheet metal offcut. The burr on a machine part. People respect the knife, but they disrespect the metal. They grab it without thinking, and that's where the laceration happens.
Category two is crush injuries. To me, this is just the stuff of nightmares.
It's the classic pinch point hazard. Hands getting caught between moving parts, or between a moving part and a fixed object.
And the thing about crush injuries is that they so often seem to happen when people are just trying to be helpful or fast. You know, I'll just grab that piece that fell.
That is the textbook scenario.
Huh.
We have this cognitive bias where we believe we are faster than the machine. You see a part jamming a conveyor and your brain just says, I can snatch that out before the roller gets there.
But the machine doesn't blink.
The machine doesn't blink, it doesn't hesitate, and it doesn't feel resistance. By the time your brain even registers that you weren't fast enough, your hand is already in the mechanism.
Oof. Okay, category three is burns and chemical exposure. The source lists hot surfaces, corrosive substances, and electrical hazards.
And this creates a huge challenge because these are often invisible hazards.
Mm.
A piece of steel that is 500 degrees looks exactly like a piece of steel that's at room temperature. A puddle of clear solvent looks just like water. This requires a much higher level of situational awareness. You just can't trust your eyes alone.
And category four, repetitive strain injuries. This one feels different. It's not one event, it's a process.
It is. It's cumulative trauma. Carpal tunnel, tendonitis. The source attributes this to excessive force, vibration, and poor ergonomics.
I feel like this one gets ignored in safety meetings because there's no blood, nobody screams.
Precisely. It's silent. But you talk to a mechanic who has been wrenching for 30 years and now can't open a jar of pickles because his grip strength is gone.
Yeah.
That is a serious injury. It just took 30 years to fully happen.
So we have the four horsemen of hand destruction. Cuts, crushes, burns, and strain. Now, let's look at the toolkit for safety. The text outlines five best practices. And I want to get real about these because some of them are way easier said than done.
Agreed. Compliance is always harder than the theory.
Okay, practice number one. Wear the right gloves. And the source really emphasizes matching the glove to the hazard.
This is a critical evolution in safety. 10 years ago, wear gloves just meant wear those thick leather work gloves.
Which were terrible for dexterity. You couldn't feel anything.
Exactly. And because you couldn't feel anything, people took them off to do precise work. And that's when
they got cut. Great.
That's when they got cut. Today, we have these amazing engineered fabrics, Kevlar, Dyneema, HPPE, that offer super high cut resistance, but they fit like a second skin.
The text mentions different ratings, cut resistant, heat resistant, impact resistant. But I want to bring up a controversy the source just hints at. Is there a time when wearing gloves is actually the wrong call?
Yes, and this is a vital nuance. If you are working with rotating machinery, a lathe, a drill press, a milling machine gloves can become a catch hazard.
Explain that, because it sounds so counterintuitive to take your armor off when you're working with a spinning blade.
So if a bare finger touches a spinning lead screw on a lathe, you might lose some skin or get a bad cut. But if a glove touches that same screw, the fabric can snag. The machine will wrap that fabric up in a fraction of a second, and it will pull your whole hand and arm in with it.
And that is the degloving scenario, or a spiral fracture.
It's catastrophic. So the rule is generally gloves for handling material, bare hands for operating rotating machinery. You have to know the difference.
That's a really, really important distinction. It's not just PCE always, it's PPE smart.
Correct.
All right, moving to practice two. Maintain machine guards and safety devices. This includes the famous lockout to gout, or LOTO.
This is the engineering control. It's about removing the human element from the equation.
But let's be honest here. LOTO is the one safety procedure that seems to get bypassed the most. Why is that?
It's time and pressure. Proper lockout to gout, shutting down all power, bleeding off any hydraulic pressure, putting your personal lock on, it takes time. Maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
And if the machine is just jammed and it would take 30 seconds to clear?
The operator thinks, why would I spend 15 minutes shutting everything down for a 30-second fix? They're trying to be productive. They're trying to hit their quota. But that 30 seconds is when the sensor resets, the machine cycles, and the injury happens.
So the best practice here isn't just have the locks. It's creating a culture where it's okay to stop the line for 15 minutes.
You nailed it. If management screams about downtime every time someone does LOTO, people will stop doing it. The safety device is useless without the culture to back it up.
Practice three, stay alert and avoid distractions. The text specifically mentions jewelry and loose clothing.
Again, more catch hazards, rings, watches, even hoodie strings. In a shop, these are all liabilities.
There's also a specific line in here I liked. Use tools instead of hands for tasks like removing debris.
Use a push stick. Use a brush. Never, ever use your fingers to wipe away chips. It's such a simple rule, but it requires discipline. You have to walk over and get the brush.
It's that two-second laziness that gets you.
It is. Every time.
Okay. Practice four brings us full circle to our favorite topic, prioritize hand hygiene. We discussed the illness aspect, but the text frames this as reducing absenteeism.
It's about availability, right? You can't build widgets if your whole team is at home with norovirus. But there's also a skin health aspect. Dermatitis is a huge issue in machining. If you don't wash off the coolants and oils properly, or if you don't use barrier creams, your skin just breaks down. Mm. And once your hands are cracked and painful, you change how you work. You might lose grip strength, or maybe you're just distracted by the pain.
So washing up isn't just about germs. It's about maintaining the integrity of the tool itself, the skin.
Exactly right.
And finally, practice five, conduct regular safety training. But the source emphasizes hands-on demonstrations. Why is the hands-on part so critical here? Why can't we just watch a video?
Because adults learn by doing. Watching a video about a table saw kickback is abstract. Standing next to the saw, feeling the vibration, and having an instructor physically show you exactly where the no-go zone is, that creates muscle memory.
It makes the danger real.
It grounds the theory in reality. Also, training shouldn't be a one-time thing. We all drift, we get comfortable. We need those daily toolbox talks to remind us that the machine still wants to hurt us if we let it.
So we have a pretty comprehensive toolkit here. We have the right gloves, but only when appropriate. The machine guards and the patience to use them. Situational awareness, hygiene, and constant training.
It covers all the bases, the engineering, the biological, and the behavioral.
As we wrap this up, I want to circle back to the intro. We talked about the hand being this evolutionary marvel.
My ultimate multi-tool.
The source concludes by saying that hand injuries are preventable. And that's the optimistic take. But I just can't shake that active refuser stat, the 1 in 5 who won't wash their hands.
It's the outlier that challenges the entire system.
So if we have 20% of the workforce that actively resists a simple, low-effort health measure, how much of safety is actually about better Kevlar or better sensors?
That is the provocative question for the future of safety, isn't it? We are reaching the limits of what physical gear can do for us. Gloves can only get so cut-resistant. Guards can only get so smart.
So the next frontier isn't hardware.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. The next frontier is psychology. It's figuring out why that 20% refuses, and then how to design systems that keep them safe despite their own stubbornness. Maybe it's AI cameras that detect when hands are in a danger zone and shut the machine down automatically, you know, removing the choice entirely.
Designing for the human element, flaws and all.
Exactly. Because you can't fire 20% of the workforce. You have to protect them, sometimes from themselves.
That is a heavy thought to leave on. The best safety device is between your ears. But sometimes, even that malfunctions. To everyone listening, look at your hands one more time. They're your livelihood. They're how you interact with the world. Treat them with the respect they deserve. Wash them, glove them when it's appropriate, and keep them out of the pinch points.
And if you see a guard that's been removed, put it back on.
Amen to that. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Stay safe out there.